Welcome to The Peel, where we break through the surface of sustainability in Florida and get to the juicy stuff at the center of it all. I'm your host, Amber Whittle, Executive Director of South Bay Sarasota. We're a nonprofit that's increasing the resilience, affordability, and health of Florida's buildings and communities, and we're saving the planet along the way. Check out our programs and events at southbay.org, Sarasota. Our guest today is Ryan Folsky, manager on the carbon-free electricity team at RMI. Welcome, Ryan, and thanks for joining us on The Peel.
Hi, Amber. Thanks for having me be back.
I know. Number three. It's always a charm. So today we're going to talk about net zero and real zero in terms of emissions. So can you tell us what causes emissions and how power companies have reduced emissions historically?
Yeah, happy to. So when we think of the electric system historically, there were these big power plants that burn coal. And coal is, as you burn it, if you've ever grilled with charcoal, smoke comes up essentially. Smoke is carbon. And we take the power, put it on the lines, deliver it to your home. And over time, we've found other ways to make electricity other than just burning coal. We can burn natural gas, we can use nuclear for power sources, and then solar and wind as well, among other sources. And so beginning maybe 20 years ago at this point, utility companies began to really focus on reducing their emissions, their reliance on coal, to go to cleaner sources of like power generation. And the first step to reduce emissions was either building nuclear in the 70s and 80s, which sort of stopped in the 90s. And 2000s, there were a couple nuclear plants around the country that got built. But one of the big sources of emissions reductions was switching from coal to burning natural gas. We call it fuel switching in the industry. And it's been a real driver of emissions reductions, which is great. Related to that, these companies, as they reduced emissions, figured, hey, let's go set targets. Let's reduce emissions by 50% in the next 20 years. And that's sort of how it started. Let's be a little cleaner in a given time frame. And as that was happening, other companies said, hey, I'm going to look further out. Let's look to 2050. And by 2050, we're going to be zero emissions, but only on a net basis, net zero, by 2050. And does that make sense? Like even Coca-Cola, companies like that have set net zero by 2050 goals. It's a pretty standard goal for most large corporations to have.
Interesting. Well, I definitely wanted to dig into what net zero is, but I do have a question for you. I remember in 2008, and you can tell I worked at the conservation campus right near that TECO owns. So that's why I seem to know so much about TECO. And I would look at their stacks, and we were just out there looking at the manatees, and they're pulling down one of their coal stacks, which is a really scary operation to watch. They do it from the top. But I remember in 2008 with the ARPA funding that one of the things that they did was they had all the scrubbers on power plants. And so people didn't used to want to live in Apollo Beach, Florida, because literally they'd be covered in coal dust, their houses would. And since that happened in the last, you know, starting in the last 10 years, the real estate market there has just taken off. There are now all these super expensive homes because, of course, they're right on the canals and on the beach. So in terms of emissions, did those scrubbers, was that a big program that helped decrease emissions, or was it really just the fuel switching?
No, that's a great point. Those scrubbers have done a great job in also reducing emissions. They, again, capture the dirty stuff and scrub it, if you will, yeah, for storage. And the problem with those is they're very expensive. There's research that RMI has done and put out that shows that despite coal declining as a percentage of total power produced in the country, the capital investment in coal plants has actually gone up, doubled in kind of that time frame, the 2005 to 2020 time frame. And it's because there were a lot of build out of scrubbers and things like that versus looking at alternative sources of power that might be cheaper and might have been cheaper, especially looking back.
So instead of building twice as many, it just cost twice as much, and it might have been a better move to build a different type of plant.
Potentially. And a lot of these things extended the life of coal plants, too, because they now, instead of having, 5 years left, this reinvigorated them for better or worse. And now we've seen coal plants that are going to be operational until the mid-2040s.
Interesting. All right. So now that we've started talking about that, will you tell us what net zero is? Because you definitely made it sound like it wasn't zero emissions. It was net zero.
Yeah. So let's dive into that a little bit. So if you booked an air travel, a trip on an airplane, you can see a lot of times you can buy carbon offsets for your trip. It's a couple dollars per trip, depending on where you're going. And that is basically buying stuff that reduces the emissions from your travel directly. So that's an example of personal net zero. If you don't want to, if you want to fund the damage you're doing from that carbon, you can. And so net zero is the same thing, where these big companies are still going to emit to some extent, but they can buy offsets that make their total emissions, the plus side with the minus side, be zero or close to zero. That's what net zero really means, is you're buying offsets. And so one of the challenges of net zero is who's going to pay for the net? Who's going to buy those offsets? When FPL sets a net zero goal, are customers expected to pay that, or are their investors expected to pay that? And it's unclear at this point what that would mean.
And my other question is, who's monitoring these offsets? Like, I did read an article about planting trees in Africa, and they said within 5 years, 90% of them were no longer there, whether it's because of lack of water or it was used for a fuel source. So when you do these carbon offsets, it's always hard to know that your money is actually going towards an offset permanently.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of complication around what offsets are, and very little oversight, and there's different ways. There's different kinds of crediting programs, but there is no standardization in a real way yet, as exactly as you're saying.
So can we talk about, I don't know if you know this, but I only know a little bit about it. Oh, there's like above the line and below the line when you talk about budgeting for utilities, right? So I know that FPL has a guaranteed 5% return. So they always get to have a 5% profit no matter what's happening. So it gets passed on to the consumer, the user, which is what you're talking about. So you're saying if we're going towards net zero, is that something that FPL is absorbing, or is that something that just one more fee that will be on the consumer? So do you know any more about that above the line, below the line?
I think the short answer is that has not been decided, because FPL and other utilities have yet to do this in size to get to net zero. And so that's exactly, I think, what we're hoping to shine the light on, is to see who's going to pay for this and what happens if that cost becomes too large.
Yeah, like I remember that they were building a nuclear power plant out in Levy County in the 2010s, and the consumers paid tens of millions of dollars for it, because you're paying upfront as it's happening, and then it never came to pass. So it certainly wouldn't be the first time the very expensive thing didn't happen that we paid for.
Yeah, yeah. And then even examples of fuel costs, which has been a piece of volatility in FPL bills and utility bills around the country. The company gets to pass on their fuel costs to customers, and there's a lead lag effect. So as they buy the fuel, it can take up to a year or so for that to show up in your bill directly. Lots of examples of pass-throughs. And is this a pass-through, or is this something separate? We don't know.
Probably a pass-through would be my guess. So what's driving the utility companies to go to net zero?
All of the major climate scenarios, from the Paris Agreement to IEA and the different energy agencies, have these scenarios of decarbonizing the economy. Utilities are about a third of all emissions, and so therefore their role in facilitating decarbonization of transportation, electric vehicles, building decarbonization, they're a major player. And so in order to reduce emissions, utilities have to reduce emissions that they produce and provide cleaner power.
And are they being regulated into that, or are they doing it proactively?
It's mostly proactively. There have been federal guidelines from the EPA that have exempt for cleaner power, different, like you had said earlier, scrubbers on coal plants. There's different ways you can reduce emissions from natural gas power plants as well. And so that's been a part of it, too. There's regulation. There are certain states that have aggressive decarbonization plans and some that don't, but it varies is the short answer.
And I'm sure those ones that are aggressive are probably pulling along some of the ones that are lagging a little bit too, just by peer pressure.
Peer pressure and one source of emissions is purchased power, which is when your utility doesn't produce enough power itself to serve all customers. And so they buy power from the market. And as the market, if you will, the excess power gets cleaner, that reduces emissions indirectly as well.
And so I've also heard of real zero. What is real zero compared to net zero?
So yeah, real zero is something that NextEra Energy, which is the parent of FPL, put out almost 2.5-3 years ago already. And what it means is they're not going to be net zero. They're not going to buy offsets. They are actually going to have zero emissions from their operations, which kind of takes away all these issues we were talking about. There is no concern over who's going to buy those offsets, if they're above the line, below the line, if they're passed through. There are no offsets in their plan. Example.
Interesting. So how are they going to do that?
They're going to do it by continuing to aggressively invest in solar, especially, and storage is a big component. They're also going to switch a lot of their natural gas power plants today to different forms of hydrogen and renewable natural gas.
Okay, interesting. So how can you tell me a little bit about storage in terms of FPL? Like, is it, I saw at Babcock Ranch, you guys have some storage, but are they doing big storage areas the way they're doing big solar areas?
Yeah. So a cool thing about the Babcock Ranch as an example for this, the Babcock Ranch solar farm, is there are enough batteries for, it's either 4 or 8 hours of supply. So all the power that you produce during the daytime, if it's not all used, you can store it in a battery and use it overnight. What's cool about storage, too, is you can use it in shorter bursts. So if a cloud passed over a solar farm, that little bit of storage can be there and smooth out some of the ups and downs. FPL is using this to really, if you will, sort of overbuild solar, capture that excess energy in a battery, and deliver it at night. Are periods where load spikes on a really hot day, for example.
Right. So is, I have two questions. One, do they do the batteries in conjunction with the solar panel farms? Like, so they're right next to each other. That's my first question.
Typically, yes. That's where it makes sense. So you don't have, because if you put power onto the grid, the wires, there's a little bit of loss. So if you can locate storage right next to the production, you don't have the losses right away.
So you did mention hydrogen. So I wanted to circle back to that. I've really heard a lot of people talk about that is the next miracle fuel. Have you seen the, especially in terms of like vehicles and fleet vehicles? So have you heard about this on the utility scale?
Yeah. So the FPL is planning to use hydrogen. They're calling green hydrogen, which means the hydrogen is produced from renewable energy sources. There's different colors of hydrogen, and it's all based around the kind of power that is used to produce that hydrogen. And so FPL and their plan claims that hydrogen will serve as another form of storage. So instead of batteries, they're going to use excess renewable power to produce hydrogen that then can be burned in retrofitted natural gas plants.
Interesting. So can you tell me about the different sources of hydrogen? You're saying some are green.
So yeah, some green are not. Hydrogen is the best. It's from 100% renewable sources. There's blue hydrogen, which is made from less clean sources, and that there's gray and black. Black would be the dirtiest form of hydrogen. It's a question of whether it reduces emissions or not as you move from, you know, black hydrogen to the green hydrogen.
Do you know what the ultimate source is of, like, black versus green? Is it water? Is it?
I'm not an expert on hydrogen.
Okay. Yet.
I think we all might have to become much better versed in the types of hydrogen and the way it's used.
Obviously, I do, because I didn't even realize that there were different types. I thought it was just like you get hydrogen the way you get helium or something.
Well, that's what you would say. There are hydrogen cars and trucks, and you can fill up your tank with hydrogen. And I don't know that they distinguish. And that's sort of one of the problems of hydrogen is there a certification standard? How do you prove, if you will, that it is green, blue, black, gray, whatever color that you claim for it to be?
Okay. So in this whole conversation we've had about net zero and real zero and how utilities are really trying to scale up the renewable energy, why does this make a difference to our listeners?
This makes a difference for all of us. The main thing that we hit on earlier is who's going to pay for net zero, real zero? And it's going to be customers. And the great thing about real zero is it's really clear who's going to pay for it. Customers are going to pay for it. Net zero, it's blurry. It puts more risk on customers to be in a net zero scenario because you don't know the price of those carbon offsets. And again, the great news about real zero is that the cheapest sources of power today are renewables, storage, solar farms, wind farms, and even to some extent, sort of energy efficiency plays a big role here. And as we move forward in time and electrify everything, which is something we like to say, we need to have lower emissions. And this is an example of a company that has a real plan to get to real zero for the benefit of customers, for the benefit of the economy and other sectors.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you to Ryan, and thanks for listening to The Peel. To get involved with South Bay Sarasota, visit southbay.org/Sarasota. Until next time, stay sunny.